When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Wine Soundtrack USA. Listen to the passion with which producers narrate their winery and their world. In 30 Answers, discover their stories, personalities, and passions.
Hello, friends and listeners of Wine Soundtrack. This is Allison Levine, and today I am with Gina Richmond, the co-owner and winemaker at Mangles Vineyards in the Sassoon Valley in California. Gina, welcome, and tell us about Mangles.
Welcome. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you, Allison. We are in Sassoon Valley, Mangles Vineyards. I've been partners with Gary Mangles since 2007. We did start making home wine together and experimenting in 2005, and then made it official in 2007. And we've been making wine together ever since. And we converted a three-car garage into a winery. So I am literally a garagiste, like they like to say. Uh-huh. And we kind of expanded from one car to the two cars to the three cars and took it all over. So we've been doing that since 2007. We were fortunate to be in the co-op for quite a few years, about 7 years, to help us kind of get started. And then we were able to have our own tasting room on Sassoon Valley Road, right next door to the co-op, which on my family's property. And we've been on that property for about 130 years. And it used to be a nursery that my family owned. So it was already a pre-built place, and we were able to then convert it into the tasting room.
Wow.
The winery itself is on Gary's property, just on Morrison Lane, a stone's throw away from the tasting room. And Gary's family as well has been in Sassoon Valley since about 1865. So you have two families working together that have been in this area for a very long time.
Wow, wow. So tell me a little bit about Mangles. Do you have any estate fruit? Do you have vineyards, or are you sourcing fruit? And if so, from where?
Everything is estate. Gary is the grower in the partnership, and I'm the winemaker. About, I would say, 95% of the varieties we get are on his property on Morrison Lane, which is roughly planted at about 35 acres is planted.
Okay.
To quite a few different varieties. And then the Petite Syrah is actually on my property, which is right next to the tasting room, and that's only about 2 acres.
Ah.
But he farms and manages it all, and then we do bring it right into the garage winery. Now, of course, with 35 acres, he sells a lot of fruit as well. So we're only getting a small portion of what he grows, but we get to, you know, pick which rows we want and kind of get to experiment. He even has a block that he likes to call his university block, where it's 2 rows of this and maybe 4 rows of that. And that gives him a chance to try different varieties out and see what's growing well.
So what are the varieties that you're working with? And maybe there are some weird things on those university blocks that you can share.
Yes, all the interesting things are on the university block. I mean, he was one of the first to have Verdello in the area. We also have Graciano, uh-huh, which no one else in Sassoon Valley has. And that's about 2 rows. And that actually came from cuttings from Artesa Winery, because my husband is also a viticulturist and he was managing their vineyards and asked if we could get cuttings. So that was kind of a special thing to be able to bring that from another winery that my husband works with or worked with and grow that. So that's a very interesting variety that we use in a red blend of ours, a co-ferment. We also have Grenache, which is very interesting, that we use for the rosé and the co-ferment as well.
Ooh.
The others are probably more your mainstay. We have Sauvignon Blanc, Petit Syrah, Pinot Grigio, so.
Oh. And what is your total case production?
We do roughly 1,000 cases a year, you know, and that goes up or down a little bit depending on crop load and that sort of thing, but roughly 1,000 cases.
And are you direct to consumer or available in any markets?
All direct to consumer. We are very small, so it's pretty much our tasting room, a few little restaurants here and there in the area, really. And kind of like, I don't know if you know the Filling Station or Pioneer Tap Room. So a few kind of other tap rooms and wine bars that will pour us.
Oh, very cool. So growing up in this area and having a long history, you're in the Sassoon Valley, which is a lot of vineyards. You're right on the backside of Napa Valley. What is your first memory relevant to wine?
Well, I did grow up around it. My parents were not in the business, but we were farmers. We had a nursery. We had oranges as well. And because I come from an Italian family, wine was at all the dinner meals, at every occasion. It was part of food and wine and sharing and family. Mm-hmm. And because we're so close to Napa, my earliest memories, and actually, I only slightly remember this because I was a toddler, but my mom always likes to tell the story. I knew she'd be a good winemaker. We would go to the St. Helena Cheese Company, and I would run ahead and I'd get to the place where they had sort of all the funky cheeses and the dried mushrooms, and I'd freeze. I go, I don't like this. So she goes, now I see it. She had a good sniffer back then. But then that would be a day trip, right? We would go there. We would go to a winery here and there.
Just tagged along.
Yeah, have picnics when you were allowed to picnic.
So as a kid, you were being dragged along and couldn't drink. But then when you started drinking, is there a particular wine or one that comes to mind, one of those aha moment wines? And if so, what was it and what was the occasion?
I was fortunate. I went to Fresno State and got an enology degree and, made a lot of friends there. And then I did my very first internship was actually at Spring Mountain Vineyards. Mm-hmm. In Spring Mountain. And the fabulous thing about that place, it's been around since the 1800s. And the current owner really almost didn't like to get rid of his wine. He is quite a collector. And actually for our Thanksgiving gift, I was given a bottle of 1979 Elivette, a bottle of 1985 Elivette, and then it was two currents. And at that time it was a 2000 and a 2001.
Wow.
And I remember I brought the 1985 back down to Fresno and had my friends that were still in school, and we went to a nice restaurant and we opened this bottle and just totally geeked out because it was, this was 2005. So, it's a 20-year-old bottle of wine. And we just kind of talked about it and it was still, it wasn't tasting fresh, obviously, but it was just still showing some great length and vibrancy and just to watch how it aged. And that was a really memorable moment.
Hmm.
We even really kind of dorked out on the cork and how great it was.
That's what happens when you get a bunch of enology students together.
Exactly.
So if we were to come to your home and check out your wine cellar, what would we find in there? Are you drinking a lot of local stuff or some other regions or weird grapes or typical?
I've kind of made it my 2020 and now 2021 resolution to really try a lot more wines. So there's a lot more international things in my cellar right now, just trying to broaden my horizons. Maybe see some interesting varieties that might end up in the university block.
You never know.
You never know. And during COVID, I actually was trying to buy from a lot of my friends that I did go to school with, that I've worked with, that I was fortunate enough to be able to keep my job. I have another job on the side of Mangles, and And so was my husband. And I just wanted to make sure that I could try to help my local community, meaning California, my local wine community out and get to try some great wines. And I knew how they were made because they were made by people who learned just like I did, so.
And when you say international, any particular regions that you focus on?
I'm really interested in studying Italian varieties right now and Spain and Portugal, because we do grow Tempranillo. We do make a port, the Graciano.
Port style.
Yes, port style. Sorry, port style. I'd like to investigate what they're doing. It's definitely different terroir, but sure. To get an idea of how do theirs taste in comparison. I actually just got a Spanish Verdello in a wine club shipment, and I was amazed at how much it tasted like my Verdello. Ooh. So I was like, maybe I'm not necessarily always striving to be just like Europe, but I was kind of, I gave myself a pat on the back, like, this might be more varietally correct than I thought.
Is there something from your cellar that you drank recently that really stood out? Anything we should know about?
Not what I have to think about. Well, actually, I'm also really interested in unique packaging and listening to podcasts. And so I actually tried out the Usual wines, which are in the 375 mil. It almost looks like a little beaker.
Interesting. And?
Really great. They're, very into telling you that there's no sugar in it. You know, they tell you the alcohol, the carbs in it and everything.
There's no added sugar.
Yeah. Yes,
Let's
yes.
Let's be clear.
Yes, no added sugar is how I should put it. And I love just that unique packaging. Obviously, they're at a much bigger scale than 1,000 cases.
Sure.
But I love how it's kind of bringing, again, I grew up where wine was kind of every day. And this is great packaging to provide people for sort of an everyday experience.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I've seen the ads and I've seen the packaging. Very cool. So you're working with a bunch of different varieties. You're drinking a lot of different wine. You've got this unusual row, or the university row of unusual grapes. Do you think there's a such thing as a perfect variety?
No, I don't think so, because I think there's a variety for every occasion, right? There's so much different varieties out there and wine styles that how could you ever get bored? It's almost like movies. Like, why watch the same movie twice? Because you'll never ever watch all the movies. You're right. Never going to drink all the wines that are ever out there. And I do like to drink a wine and see the pros and see the cons. And because nothing's going to be perfect, or I think perfect is boring.
Yeah. So as a drinker, red, white, or rosé?
All of the above.
Still or sparkling?
All of the above.
For somebody who's never tasted your wines, what do you think they're missing out on?
They're missing out on getting to taste Susan Valley. We're 100% Susan Valley. It is a great area. We get to be experimentative, but my wines are not too unusual. They are easy to drink. They are meant for you to enjoy. You do not have to buy it and then store it for 10 years, but they age a long time as well. So it's kind of, you can drink now or you can hold a few later. And I think people don't understand that that is in other places other than Napa, and that we can make wines with longevity just like other places. But they are also soft and approachable right away as well.
So you're telling the story of your wines to someone who hasn't tried them, but a lot of people will turn to wine critics and scores. What's your opinion on them?
Yeah, I think they're a very helpful part of the industry. I know I'll turn to some critics for a region I don't know, because how do I know about Italy? I have not been able to go there yet. I did do a harvest in New Zealand, so I feel more comfortable with those appellations and locations to sort of pick something out. But in a place, if I don't know what I'm looking for, I do want some critics, some criticism to kind of tell me where I should go. So I think they're very important. And I think too, you know, wine is still a luxury. So I know people are hesitant on putting, even if it's $15, on something that then they're not gonna like, when they can at least read some sort of critique, maybe an explanation, maybe a score, and say, I'm gonna like that. Hmm.
So if space aliens were to land on your property, which of your wines would you want to welcome them with?
I would definitely, they'd have to warm up with the Sauvignon Blanc. Nice, tropical, really refreshing. And I'd get them kind of warmed up with that one and then end with the Petit Sirah, because it's the biggest of our wines. It goes great with food, and they would show the best of Susan Valley.
Hmm. So you've grown up in this land. You've lived here a very long time. You've spent some time in other places, but you really know this region pretty well. We know that every vintage tells a story, and we know that there are differences, you know, from vintage to vintage is never utterly consistent. But do you find that more things repeat themselves? There are more commonalities or more differences from year to year, or maybe, you know, group of year to year?
No, I see a lot of commonality. I also think it's important as a winemaker, you know, when you go into a vineyard the first time, you don't necessarily always know what to expect. But by the time, you know, this is my 15th harvest, I know when those flavors are there, and I know this is it. And I also know if I want to dial, you know, oh, last year I was kind of pushing the edge, I want to dial it back. And so as you start to really learn the vineyard and your terroir and stuff, then you can start playing with that. But there's a lot of commonalities. And so you can make things very similar from year to year here, mm-hmm. because the weather's great and we're not dealing with a lot of weather issues that might force you to make decisions that you don't really want to make.
Mm-hmm. So the nuance of a vintage is the nuance in the wine. It's mm-hmm. not big, grandiose
right.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you look for in the vineyard or in the weather that will kind of give you like predictors of what a vintage is going to be like?
Yes. I mean, I think to be a good winemaker, you have to be a decent weather person as well. So you can watch things, you know, I was making wine in, you know, 2011, in my experience, the coldest vintage I've ever experienced. And you can watch that starting in June and seeing where it's going. And you can start planning for those maybe problems or blessings, uh-huh. right? You know, so like the 2013 vintage was a phenomenal vintage, right? The weather was just perfect. And I think as you get to know a place and you get to know your winemaking skills, you can kind of feel that almost in your bones, right?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So you feel that in your bones. So I'm wondering then, are you superstitious? Do you have any sort of traditions that you do at the start of harvest to kind of set the tone? Is it like, you know, anything that you do every year? No toasts or anything?
No. I mean, we're a one-man show. I mean, well, there's two of
no
us.
No rituals.
But yeah, no real rituals. We're so small. We don't have interns. We don't. My business partner, Gary, he's fortunate to, because he's the grape grower and that's his sole business, he's there during the daytime and he's managing the fruit picking and then the actual crushing. I'm coming in at night and on the weekends handling the winemaking. We have a great partnership and he follows my instructions well as well. And so we don't really have any rituals per se, for that reason.
But, do you talk to your vines? Do you have a relationship or a ritual with them? I know that you're not the vineyard manager, but do you go and spend time in the vineyards? And if so, what's your interaction with the vines?
I don't usually talk to the vines, but I do love going for walks and taking the kids and the dog. We also are raising sheep in the vineyards as well. Kind of dabbling in the regenerative farming thing, but very new at it. Well, my husband's from New Zealand. And so when we got married, he's like, there's no sheep here. I need sheep. I need vineyards and sheep. That's what New Zealand is. So he's definitely very knowledgeable about farming sheep in the vineyard, but us bringing it to California, sort of learning the same nuances as a winemaker. When do we put the sheep in? When we take them out? So we're often doing walks in the vineyards because of that. So, is the grass too high? Do we need to move them in? Is the grass too short and we need to move them out? Oh, it's bud break. They need to come out, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of walking the vineyards. So not as talking to them, but sort of watching the farming, watching the cycle and the seasons and making decisions like that.
And so when you're a little more in your zone in the winery, do you talk to your wine? Do you play music for your wine? I mean, do you think that the wine hears or feels moods?
No, I listen to podcasts like yours, Allison.
Good answer. Good answer.
And that is actually the truth. I now being a wife and mother, I like to escape into the winery and get like just an hour of free time. You know, not free time, it's work, but an hour alone. And I find a podcast. Sometimes it's wine. Sometimes it's I do a lot of wine, agriculture, and business podcasts. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of my topics that I'm interested in. And I just can kind of, I like to watch and breathe and taste my wines and then listen to, and learn something new about something while I'm doing it.
So when you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a lawyer.
Well, good job.
I worked for a lawyer in high school and I started quizzing her about, you know, law school and I started Sac State as pre-law. And then realized law school was not gonna be for me. And then I went to Fresno State and I was amazed at the openness of winemakers. Okay. Like people, unless you're the big guys and you have trade secrets, everybody else openly shares and teaches and talks because my Sauvignon Blanc may taste different than his Sauvignon Blanc because they're from two different vineyards right. In two different, or our Sauvignon Blancs could come from the same vineyard, but he decides to do, you know, an orange wine from it. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And treats it differently and, or puts it on oak and I don't. So there's a chance to learn so many different things and there's no reason to keep them. Well, some people may decide to keep it secret, but a lot of people found it no reason. Let's just share and learn and talk about it. And that's, when I went there and I saw that, I was like, I'm home. This is the industry I want to be a part of, is collaborative.
My
and
people.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're not working, how do you spend your free time?
I love to read. I love to listen to podcasts. I love to garden. So I love to be outside. And my dad was a master gardener and I grew up in a nursery. So now I love to garden and flowers and plants and that sort of thing. Spending time with my kids and my husband, and I love to cook as well.
Wow. And if you're planning a romantic evening for you and your husband, or he's planning it for the two of you, I don't know. What sort of wines make for a romantic evening between the two of you? Do you think you have the same idea?
Well, I like all wines. My husband is more of a red wine drinker. So on a perfect evening, he and I will geek out on some really good red wines. Uh-huh. You know, definitely there, because I have done most of my years working in Napa Valley wineries, you know, Cabernet is a big part of my heart and I love that grape. So we will definitely have a good Cabernet, but then I love Rhones and sort of these kind of off the beaten path varieties. And like I said, I'm kind of experimenting with the Italian varieties. So if we could try something kind of different or funky and then end with a nice good cab, that'd be a great night.
So when you are living your life and going through your day, is there a piece of advice that someone once gave you that you try to live your life by, or it guides how you approach doing your work? And if so, what is that advice? And do you remember who gave it to you?
I don't know if I want to give him props. So my first like full-time job out of college was for Hall Wines. And I was one of their enologists. And so here I am, I did my internships, I hauled hoses, I did pump overs, I filled barrels, but I never wrote work orders. And he came in one day, Rick Ruiz, the cellar master at the time, said, "Gina, you can't be writing novels for these work orders. You gotta keep it simple." And I said, "Oh." He's like, "Yeah, don't write a novel, keep it simple." And that's actually really helped me learn to break things down so that people understand it, because I can't make the wine all the time. Like I said, Gary does a lot of the crushing during the day. I was able to break it down, and he's a smart man, but I was able to break it down where it's like, this makes sense. He's not calling me all the time. I don't understand this. What am I supposed to do next? And that was really great advice. If you can keep it concise, there's less mistakes in the cellar, and then people don't feel bad because they understood what you wanted done, and they accomplished it. And I think that's important.
So if you were going to give our listeners a piece of advice, or if you could give them a piece of advice, what would you tell them?
Just drink lots of wine. Just try it. For those who maybe are listening to your podcast because they want to even start trying wine, just try them. Read some critiques. Go to some tastings. Maybe sign up for a class. But I just think wine is such an interesting food. And it has a life of its own. And it's a complicated liquid that even winemakers don't know a whole lot about. And I think that's what makes it interesting and makes life interesting.
So when you look back at your career so far, you're still young, you've got a long career ahead of you. But when you look back at what you've done so far, what would you say is one of your proudest achievements to date?
I think my proudest achievement really is Mangles and growing this with Gary. Not many people have had the opportunity I have had. I have to give a big shout out to Gary. He's all about experimenting also. So, I mean, we've made some mistakes, and there was never a pressure to be perfect or don't fail or, oh, that cost us a lot of money. It's always been about experimenting and trying. And if we fail, we fail. And so I think I'm so proud that it's lasted as long as it has. And it keeps going, and we're excited to see where it's going to go.
That's great. Complete this sentence for me. A table without wine is like...
hell.
Okay.
My hell will have no wine.
Well, then let's imagine your heaven. If you were going to a deserted island, your piece of paradise. Remember that 1 hour you get of quiet in the winery? Now you get an island of quiet. What three wines would you take with you for this island of quiet? Ooh.
Definitely Bubbles. I love Bubbles. And I appreciate anybody who knows how to make them, because that's one thing I have not made. Dry, crisp white wines, dry rosés, love them. And then, yeah, big, nice Cabernets.
Nice and vague there. I didn't get one variety. I got Bubbles, so.
Anything bubbly. It could be champagne, cava, sparkling wine. Anything with bubbles is always a good day.
Now imagine a situation. We're sitting at a table enjoying your wine, and there's room at the table. There's a seat. There's an empty seat. Who from any walk of life, living or deceased, would you want to be at that table trying Mengel's wines?
Actually, my grandfather. You know, I grew up with wine because it was part of the, you know, our Italian family. And he was not a winemaker either. But I think he'd be proud of me, and I would love for him to be there, try my wine.
Hmm, beautiful, beautiful. Don't get sad. So, you were very vague with me about your three island wines, but we are going to play a game, and I'm going to have to be more specific. So I'm going to pick your wines. So just one of the last things we do on this podcast is we play a game where we pair wine with music. And why? Because wine makes us feel something. It makes us feel an emotion in every wine. As you said from the very beginning, there's no perfect variety. There's one for every occasion. Mm-hmm. And music also conjures up the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you started it with that diversity thing. I'm wondering if you could pair some of your wines with music. Now you can be vague if you want. You can give me a genre. You can give me a specific musician. You can give me a specific song. Whatever you're comfortable with or whatever comes to mind. But let's start with your Verdello.
I think the Verdello would be great, probably with some bossa nova, because it's sort of islandy and but mellow and kind of just the start of a nice romantic night. And the Verdello would go great with that.
Now, you said you would welcome aliens with a glass of Sauvignon Blanc. What about that?
That would probably be on that kind of tropical note, like reggae. I love, like, roots reggae. So.
And you were talking about rosé. What grape do you make rosé from?
We make it from Grenache.
Okay, so...
I do have a dry rosé, and then... we also have another line called Cora, and there's a white blend, a rosé, which is from Grenache, and then a red, the co-ferment. Uh-huh. But they all have a slight sweetness.
So your dry rosé, let's pair that one with music. Unless you already have a song for the sweet rosé, I don't know.
No, the dry rosé, you know, probably just some good old... You know, I like all kinds of music, country and Western. So I think some good country would be nice with that rosé.
I remember when it used to be country Western. And what about, you said you love big reds and you're making Petite Syrah. Mm-hmm. So what about that one?
I think that would be good with some jazz. Again... great with food, and then I can see some nice jazz in the background to round out the evening.
Okay, you're doing great, and I would finish, but there's one more. Okay. You said you spent a lot of time in Napa, and Cabernet holds a really special place in your heart. So what about a good Napa Cab?
Ooh, rock and roll, baby.
Well, there you go. We've hit every genre of music with every genre of wine. Well, this has been great. I have a final question for you. You said that you've been trying to explore more wines and that you've been drinking a lot of other things, trying to get out there. And I'm wondering, physically getting out there, what's one wine region that's at the top of your bucket list to get to next?
No doubt about it, Italy, because like I said, I did a harvest in New Zealand. Then I did travel Australia a little bit and still have friends in Australia and family in New Zealand. I did go to Bordeaux as well to be with some friends for a little bit. I never worked there, but did go. Mm-hmm. But haven't been to Italy. And with my Italian roots, I would love to explore that country. And, you know, who better than food and wine is Italy? Yeah. Maybe my French friends will be upset by that. But, but yes, that's a bucket list country and wine region for sure.
Fantastic. Well, I think you should start planning that trip. But I also think that our listeners should plan a trip up to the Sassoon Valley. Maybe it's on a stop on your way to Napa or on your way home. But if people want to come here, how can they visit you and what kind of experience would they have?
So because we are small, we are only open Friday through Sunday from 12 to 5. We are on the main road of Sassoon Valley and open, you know, no appointments necessary. We have a beautiful backyard because it used to be a nursery, and my father is still alive and being our master gardener, even if he's not a master gardener in real anymore, certificate wise. So he's dabbling around in the garden. And so it's just a beautiful, tranquil spot to try our wines, relax, and enjoy Sassoon Valley.
Wonderful. And they can find you and either order your wines online or make an appointment by going where?
Mangelsvineyards.com. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook as Mangels Vineyards.
Fantastic. Gina, thank you so much for joining us on Wine Soundtrack. And I hope you had a good time.
Great. Thank you so much, Allison. This was my first and I hope not my last.
Thanks for listening to a new episode of Wine Soundtrack USA. For details and updates, visit our website, winesoundtrack.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.